Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, yes, I hear you.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go in there?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Okay, Norma Adams Lady, you and Mr. Boykin, and I think I hear a little feedback, so I'm going to try to get that straight. Okay, no, I'm going to get this feedback. Okay, Norma Adams Lady, you and Mr. Boykin, and I think I hear a little feedback. Okay, I thought you were going to read. Okay, no, I'm going to get this feedback. Okay, we're having a little feedback. Okay. So now I'm going to go back into StreamYard and see if we can hook that up, okay? Can y'all give me a minute for that?
Okay.
I'm just so honored. I'm getting a look at Miss D. Roger Boykin.
I mean,
what does a woman have to do?
You may find out when you write a book.
Get an audience with this man.
You may find out.
Okay.
Nothing.
See, you wrong for that. You are okay, we're gonna try this so we don't hear any feedback. It looks like we are on Blog Talk Radio and going. I wish and Marva's on it. She said she can hear it. Okay. Good deal.
Right.
Thanks, Marva. And we have StreamYard going so people can watch it on Facebook on StreamYard, and they can also watch it on Facebook on Zoom. And so we are good to go. So I'm just a nut trying to get a squirrel, and I'm going to pass it on to the incomparable. And if you see it on those who are on the StreamYard, they see that I'm turning it over to the one and only, she's shorter than I am, Norma Adams Wade. And so she needs to be sitting up high like you, Mr. Boykin. But we need to make it high for her. So I am turning it over to B. Norma Adams Wade. And
there she is.
Oh, look at her. She's trying to be high and mighty up there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, good deal. So you are good to go, and Norm is monitoring, and this may work. Go on with your best.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hello.
It's so good to see you. Let me greet my co-host before I tell everybody who our wonderful, outstanding, spectacular guest is. Well, everybody, you are watching and listening to the Blog Talk Show, I Was Just Thinking. I am Norma Adams Wade, your host, and as I tell you every week, audience, you are my co-host, and I always quickly tell you I stole that unashamedly from Wendy Williams. Now, if you want to know more about some of the topics that we deal with on this Blog Talk Show, you can always pick up any one of Cheryl Smith's three publishing enterprises. One is Texas Metro News. And here was a wonderful display special edition once that she did on the outstanding Ed Bernice Johnson. You can pick up the Garland Journal. And then if you are a social media digital person, you can access iMessenger Media online. And so right now it's a few minutes after 11 a.m. Guess who we have today? You are looking at Roger Boykin. He is a musician extraordinaire. Let's see, what all can I tell you about him? Okay, he's multi-talented. He plays music in various genres, including jazz, blues, funk, and he'll tell us a little bit more about funk. He plays various instruments. He even does gospel. He plays guitar. He plays bass. He plays piano, keyboard, flute, and saxophone. He composes music for all of those various instruments. And if you, for 16 years, he taught students in voice and instruments as a faculty member at the Booker T. Washington Performing and Visual Arts School in Dallas. And it is, that school is very well known for training and inspiring performers, Nora Jones, Erica Badu, and various folk of that ilk. And some of them have been his students and have been very inspired by him. Now, Boykins has published music, various music method books for piano, guitar, bass, and saxophone. And he has produced recordings for his Soultex record label. He founded that back in the 60s. And several of his productions, his recordings, are collector's items now. And he currently teaches on Facebook. You know, our lives have gone through many changes currently because of the pandemic. Now, as a songwriter, he also wrote some albums for the famous name David Fathead Newman, for Blue Mitchell and Joyce Lofton, Brenda De Los Santos, and many others. He even has done works for symphonic work, and they were performed by the Dallas Symphony Orchestra in the 80s. For the Black Academy of Arts and Letters, he wrote a play called Zanzibar, which was performed there in the 90s. And we will hear more today about his entry into writing books and what have you. Now, for a long time, more than 20 years, he was a host of a jazz radio show on KKDA Radio. Now, a lot of you will remember him from that. So that's just a little bit of what Roger Boykins has done. Say hello to us, Roger Boykins.
Hello, everybody.
And that's that cool jazz voice you're hearing. He's noted for his cool jazz voice. And, you know, on a certain radio stations, that particular voice has become part of your identity. So his cool jazz voice is just a part of who he is. Now, let me explain my math. I very much support the directive that we wear a mask. I am in a building with other people, but because I'm in a room by myself, I'm going to go ahead and remove my mask, but I very much honor the mask. The mask, as I tell you all the time, it protects you from me, and your mask protects me from you. But I'll remove it today. So let me begin, Roger Boykins, with this question. In the context of all of your career achievements, and they have been many, in Dallas and nationally. You've traveled all over the planet, so to speak, and you've performed all over the many decades. Take us down memory lane, just to begin our conversation a bit, by pointing to some of the events that you view as career highlights. Maybe it would be some of the people with whom you performed or some of the places where you have performed. Kind of take us down memory lane with you just to kind of get us started.
Well, I performed with quite a few jazz and blues musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just name a few of the people and some comedians. I did three shows with Bill Cosby.
Okay.
In 1978 at the Houston Music Theater.
Uh-huh.
I did a show with Red Fox.
Oh.
I did a show with Dolemite, Rudy Ray Moore.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
Did you ever stop laughing?
No, it was ridiculous. And then I toured with David Fathead Newman. I toured with Isaac Hayes. I toured with Leon Spencer.
Mm.
Those were national tours. And for a while, I was in special services when I was in the Army, and I toured over Alaska because I was stationed in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Okay.
And so I was in the Army band, and so we toured playing various cities in Alaska.
Okay.
Now,
I got to ask you about Alaska, and I'm going to go ahead and ask you about being in the service there.
Okay.
I don't know that I hear some people say they would like to visit Alaska, but I don't know that I would. How did you deal with the weather? And I'm sure that you being in the service, and you did spend, what, about 3 years or so in the Army, Special Service Army? How did you deal with it?
For 2 years.
2 years.
Well, just have to get used to the cold, and it just becomes routine. For an example, from about the middle of September until the middle of April,
mm-hmm.
it's all snow. The snow doesn't start melting until April.
Right.
So you have to learn to deal with the snow. It got as cold as 55 below zero.
Oh, I see. My brain won't even process that. No. Mm-mm.
And I was the organist at the church, and so the pastor came by in his Cadillac and picked me up, and we went to church. It was 55 below zero.
You made it through service, huh?
Oh, well, you know, it was indoors. We didn't play outside.
Well, since we're talking about you being in special services, was that, let's see, what period of time was?
I was in the Army from 1965 to 1967.
So it was during the 60s. Now, that was the time, I think, when we here at home, we were not kind to the military, if I've got that time period right. You know, we really honor former service people now, but I think during the 60s, I want to say that was the time when people back home were not very kind to people in the military.
Well, it was during the Vietnam War.
Okay, Vietnam, yeah.
It was after troops came home from Vietnam that they met with some unkindness.
Okay.
And you know, the Vietnam War was a very unpopular war.
Right.
And I was fortunate to have been stationed in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I lost some friends and students. And I say students because after 3 months in the Army band, they transferred me to the Army Education Center.
Okay.
I taught English. I was an English teacher at the Army Education Center
okay.
for 18
okay.
months.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my students were sent to Vietnam and were killed in Vietnam.
Wow.
And my best friend in basic training in Louisiana was killed in Vietnam
wow.
as well.
Wow.
And I was lucky to have been a musician because I was qualified as a piano player.
Okay,
so
okay.
They sent me to the Ninth Army Band in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Here's what I want to ask you. All right, by the time you got in military service, obviously you were already schooled in your multi-talent. when did you personally begin to realize that people were taking notice of your ability? And when did you kind of begin to feel, you know, I can do this. I can make a career of this. When did that light bulb come on?
I was 15 years old at Lincoln High School.
Okay.
And I realized it then. And while I was 15, I joined the Musicians Union and started. I played my first professional gig while I was still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a senior, I was transferred to James Madison High School.
Okay.
And at that time, I sang every Friday and Saturday night at a nightclub called the Vegas Club, which was owned by Jack Ruby.
Okay. All right. Let's get that point now. You played as a teenager high school student at the club that was owned by Jack Ruby, who murdered the assassin of John Kennedy.
Right,
is that
right?
Wow. Little did you know.
True. And he actually came to my house in South Dallas. He wanted to sign me to an exclusive contract to be my manager.
Whoa.
And
oh, gosh. Just imagine. Oh, you turned left instead of turning right, and you avoided that.
I turned it down because he said that I wouldn't be able to go to college. He would get me a private tutor. Well, I always wanted to go to college.
Okay.
And because I had started developing an interest in jazz, which is a very difficult music, and I knew that I had to study theory and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But I started out playing and singing the blues, B.B. King style, you know, that type of thing. And there was some really great jazz musicians in Dallas. I wanted to learn to play jazz, and I had to go to college
right.
to get that.
Right. Okay, now, that was, you were at Lincoln and you played and you also sang. But let's go back even further than that. Growing up, let's see, I think you were one of what, three children or something like that? Tell us a little bit about your beginning family.
I had three brothers.
Three brothers, okay.
One is deceased now, but
okay.
I still have two. And so my mother probably wanted some girls, but she only had boys. And so but she was the only female in the house with my father and four of us boys.
Yeah. Now, what part of Dallas?
Well, I was born in Friedmanstown.
You were born in Friedmanstown. Okay.
2812 Thomas Avenue.
Oh, well, see, you were destined. That area there, Thomaston Hall, and all of the deep African American history. It was you were destined. You were destined.
But I grew up in South Dallas.
Yeah.
That's where I went to Lincoln and Madison.
Right.
I lived in a part of South Dallas called Queen City, and then moved to the Wheatley District. And I went to Whitley Elementary School, and then 1 year at H.S. Thompson.
Okay.
On Bass Street, it was in the eighth grade, and then to Lincoln High School for 3 years, and then to James Madison.
Now, your parents had some sort of a business, I think, that dealt with hair products, Boykins. I'm remembering something about Boykins hair products or something like
that.
Tell us about that.
My father was the founder and owner of Mr. B's Beauty Supply.
Okay.
And my mother, for 25 years, was president of the Dallas Beauticians Association.
I didn't know that.
Longtime hairdresser, and she led that organization. And so the hair business was really the family business.
Okay. So you grew up among parents who had their own business. They were entrepreneurs. In the South Dallas area. Very good. So
later in Oak Cliff, because of when I was 20 years old, we moved to Cedar Crest area.
Okay. Now, is that building still somewhere in the Oak Cliff area? Am I remembering seeing a building that still has the name Boykins on it somewhere?
No, my father and my two brothers and my cousin Andrew Kellum formed, Mr. B's Beer Supply Incorporated. They incorporated and built a new building, which still stands, but it had storefront. Well, it was like an office building, and he had a beer supply in there too. There was an insurance company in there, and a hair salon, and so forth. But he sold the business. And the business still exists. The building still exists.
Right.
The company was sold approximately 1980, somewhere back in there.
Okay, I think that's what I'm remembering, seeing the building with that name somewhere. Anyway, but we won't dwell on that. Okay, I'm wanting you to take us from that young Roger Boykin with your three brothers, and your parents are entrepreneurs. When did you make this decision, or you said that you started off being interested in blues? What, y'all used to listen to the radio or something? I mean, where did that come from? And then when did it begin to solidify with you that this is more than just a passing interest? Take us from that little, maybe 5-6-year-old on into you 15-year-old, and then you ending up working somewhere in Jack Ruby's business enterprise.
Well,
take us along that route.
Well, I started at age 9 playing the ukulele.
The ukulele?
Right. And I
how'd you get a ukulele?
Well, there was a guy that had a television show. Television was new in those days, and Arthur Godfrey,
that's the name I've heard.
And he played ukulele. And so watching him on television, I wanted to play ukulele.
Okay.
And so I got a ukulele, and for 5 years, I played the ukulele, and I was playing blues.
Did you teach yourself? How did you learn to play? You taught yourself?
Well, you know, I'm an entirely self-taught musician.
Okay.
But see, I went to college and majored in theory and composition.
Okay.
But I never had any lessons. I taught myself to play all my instruments.
Okay.
And so, my parents surprised me with a guitar.
So you got the ukulele, then you graduated to guitar. Okay.
And then 6 months later, I bought a saxophone.
Wow. Why a saxophone?
Well, because a friend of mine at Lincoln played the saxophone, and I was just curious about it.
Okay.
So I bought one. Mm-hmm. And then 6 months after that, I was in college, and I started playing both piano and flute while at Kansas University, which was my first college.
Okay.
University. And then when I was in the Army, I took up and so that's pretty much all of it. But I decided at age 15 that I wanted to be a professional musician. Music was natural for me. It was easy. It was just something that I guess I was born to do.
Right.
It just really never came hard for me to like music.
Now, I'm wondering, you know, the Jackson 5 and all of them, they're in a family setting with musicians, I'm blanking the name on that other family, but several families, that's the music was the family thing. But I'm not hearing you say that anybody else in your family was interested in music, or were they?
Well, no, but let me tell you an interesting story.
Okay.
I was the only musician in my family, but one day when my mother was 88 years old, I was taking her to a new doctor that she had never been to, and she was a little nervous about it. And so I put on a CD, Nat King Cole's Greatest Hits.
Oh.
As we were riding to East Dallas to this particular doctor's office, she sang along with Nat King Cole.
Wow.
through all the lyrics. She sang perfectly in time, perfectly in tune to all of that music. I mean, my mother could have been a great singer.
Oh,
she
wow.
just never pursued music, but wow. I think that's where I got my
I'm convinced. Do you think there's a formula to the route that you took? What, now that you look back on you then and you now, would you sum up that there was a formula that you followed, or it was just hit and miss as you go? Was it destiny at some point to the person you are?
Okay, let me explain it this way. I'm self-taught, but I had a great teacher.
Now, what does that mean?
That means that I was the only one who really knew what I wanted to learn.
Okay, I got to remember that. Hold on, let me say it. I was self-taught, but I had a great teacher.
Right.
So I like that. I'm going to steal that.
Okay, I knew that I needed to study theory. I needed to learn the building block music. I had a good ear. It only takes three things. You have to have a good ear, a good sense of time, and a good sense of pitch.
Okay.
And the other thing, I have an extensive collection of recordings.
Okay.
You can read a book, but you can also read a record.
Okay.
You read a book with your eyes.
You can read a record.
You read a record with your ears. And music is for the ear. Music not for the eye. There are just too many examples of Stevie Wonder.
Okay.
Ray Charles. Music is not reading.
Okay.
Music, we use the sense of hearing for music. And so my teachers were B.B. King and Burrell and all of the great blues, the Johnny Guitar Watson, and these were my, when they put out a record.
Yeah.
I read those records. I studied those records.
Okay, but now let me interrupt. Okay, there you are sitting and you're listening to B.B. King and those others that you named. I guess you pick up your instrument and you just start trying to imitate what you heard. How do you self-teach yourself music?
I just kept trying to play what I heard him play.
Okay.
Over and over. I might listen to a record 100 times.
Wow.
And I wanted to learn. Every time B.B. King put out a new record, I learned everything on it.
Wow.
I learned the words, and I learned the notes he played, and I wanted all the inflections. I wanted to phrase and do everything just like he did it. And then, of course, within a year, I could play anything B.B. King could play.
My goodness.
And so I had to graduate to a different form of music, and that was jazz. And so I started listening to jazz guitar play.
Okay.
Charlie Christian and Django Reinhardt and Barney Kessel and Kenny Burrell, the great jazz guitar player, and I did the same thing for them. I read that record.
So you would go out and buy that. You would hear them release something. You'd go out and buy it, I'm assuming. Come home,
right.
Put it on your turntable or whatever, listening and imitating.
And that's the way I think all of the great jazz musicians, or at least most of them, to a large degree, were self-taught.
Wow.
It just takes nature, study, and practice.
Mm. Mm. Well, I guess that practice is the key word. You know, we're always told practice makes perfect. But I just, who is that? Thelonious Monk, I think. Those sounds are so, to me, unpredictable, if that's the right word. I don't know how you can imitate that. It's not like doing da-da-da-da, you know, it's all of these. You're all over the place.
Nobody could have taught you.
Wow.
You can't teach that.
Yeah. I believe
that. That has to come natural.
Mm.
Thelonious Monk didn't have great technique, but he had originality, one of the all-time jazz composers. He was not, by any stretch, one of the greatest pianists. He was no Oscar Peterson.
Okay.
But what he played, nobody could play it like him, and nobody could compose like him. I mean, he was an original, and he's imitated because of his originality.
Let me ask you this. I didn't really know about Jimi Hendrix, but and of course he's not. I don't think you would describe him as jazz. But I always heard that Jimi Hendrix was just in a category by himself. What's your interpretation of Jimi Hendrix and how he got the reputation that he did?
Well, first of all, he learned to play from listening to B.B. King too.
I didn't know.
I mean, to another guitar player, it's pretty obvious. And the unique thing about him, he was left-handed, but he played a right-handed guitar, which means he had to play the guitar upside down. Bobby Womack, he just didn't get a left-handed guitar. They make left-handed guitars and right-handed. He learned how to play an upside-down guitar, and so that in itself made it unorthodox.
So, but why would he do that? I mean, I don't understand. Was that the only guitar he could get at the time, or why would you?
That was the one that was available, and you pretty much have to special order a left-handed guitar.
Wow.
You very seldom see them in the music stores, and so he learned how to play what he had. Bobby Womack, the great Bobby Womack, did the same thing. He played an upside down guitar too.
that's too fascinating.
And there's no way that you can predict what a human being can do.
Yeah.
Under necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
In other words.
Right. 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 Let me just take a quick little break here. Everybody, you are watching and listening to the Blog Talk Show. I was just thinking, I am Norma Adams Wade, your host, and you help me in this. You are my new audience. You are my co-host. We are listening to the very multi-talented, very prominent local musician and composer, and all anything in music, Roger Boykins. He's a product of Dallas, self-taught, but he rose to all heights. He toured with very well-known musicians, and he served time in the military. And he just told me something I didn't know, that at one point as a teenager he worked in the club of Jack Ruby, who we know being the assassin of John F. Kennedy, but he was a local Dallas entertainment.
Lee,
what?
Yeah, he was the assassin of Lee Harvey Oswald.
I'm sorry, Lee Harvey Oswald. Yeah. Lee Harvey Oswald. Thank you. Thank you so much for that clarification. Lee Harvey Oswald. And Roger Boykins just has a fascinating life, and he's telling us all about that. So now let me... I know you get asked this question a lot, but I'm interested in hearing your answer. People who have made it to the height that you have, others want to know what advice you give to people who are trying to get where you are. Now, our audience may or may not know that when you taught for 16 years at Booker T. Washington, talented and gifted high school, that you helped educate many of the names, the well-known names that came out of that school.
Well, Go ahead. Actually, I started there one semester after Nora Jones left.
Okay.
Had already graduated when I started teaching there, but the one who's a Grammy nominee 2 years in a row that I did teach was Jazmere Horn.
I've heard of her. You know what? I haven't heard her sing, but I've heard her name and her nominations for Grammys and what have you. Very soon I've got to go on YouTube and hear her sing.
Great.
That's
great.
What I hear. I hear she's just full of talent. So I also have heard that that she has told some stories about how you did get her started and gave her some tapes to listen to or something like that. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, I was co-teaching a jazz vocal class.
Okay.
And she was in the class for a couple of years, and when she first got, she didn't come to Booker T as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
She came a junior, but she only had her last 2 years there. And her grandfather, for being a preacher, she came up in the church singing the gospel.
Okay.
In rhythm and blues.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a jazz vocal class.
Okay.
And so I made a mixtape of Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Nancy Wilson, Dakota Staten, lot of the great female jazz singers. And I gave it to her and told her to listen to it. And she fell in love with Sarah Vaughan.
Okay, okay.
And the jazz style, she already had the talent. I certainly didn't teach her how to sing. I just exposed her. And
okay.
A teacher's job is to tell a student what the student needs to learn and show a student some shortcuts. As far as I'm concerned, that's the teacher's job.
Okay, okay.
And so that's all I did. And of course, I encouraged her. We went over some songs together. And she was in the class. She had a chance to, talk to me on a daily basis, not daily basis, but time I was there. And incidentally, I taught at Booker T for 15 years, but I never taught more than 4 classes. I was never a full time teacher.
Okay.
But I just. I was like a paraprofessional, I guess.
Right,
you could say.
Correct.
Adjunct.
Mm-hmm. An adjunct, uh-huh.
And so I think one of the main things that I did for her, I recognized her talent and encouraged her, positive reinforcement. The teacher, has to give a student is positive reinforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And I recognized her talent and, I encouraged her to pursue it, and she did.
Okay.
She took that tape, and she digested everything that was on there. She listened to all those great singers, and then she became one.
It sounds like she almost followed the same route that you did when you were listening to B.B. King and all those others. You went and bought their records, brought them home, and just learned everything you heard. Self-teaching yourself. It sounds like she kind of followed that same route.
That's pretty much what she did. But then she did what I did. Also, she got a scholarship. She went to the New School.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And got her degree in music. And she went to every jam session she could go to. She had a part-time job, I think, working at one of those fast food restaurants. Chipotle,
one of those, yeah.
Every night that she could, she would go somewhere to a jam session, and of course, a lot of the greatest musicians in the world are right there in New York.
Wow.
And she worked at it, and she developed into probably, I would say, one of the top female jazz singers in the world. Right.
And as you said, made it on up to being nominated for Grammys. I don't know that she ever really won one, but her name was very prominent as a Grammy nominee, I think.
Came in second.
She came in second. Okay,
good. She won the silver medal,
Wow.
And that's admirable as well.
Absolutely, it is. So taking that, and let me get back to my question. So, and I know you get the question all the time. So, what advice do you give to young ones who come to you and say, "Oh, great one, tell me how to do what you did"?
Well, what my father taught me many years ago, I mentioned this a while ago, it takes nature study and practice. The first thing I do, I want to see if they have natural ability.
Okay.
That is, if a person can keep time, match pitch, and kind of have a feeling for when a chord is supposed to change, when the chords are supposed to change in music,
mm-hmm.
then that tests that person's ability in the three areas of music.
Okay.
Melody, rhythm, and harmony.
Melody, rhythm, harmony.
And harmony. And so if they have those natural abilities, then I encourage them to listen, do a lot of listening. You practice just for technique. You know, practice doesn't develop your musical mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That has to come natural. You have to be born with a musical mind. You know, I tell people all the time, I can't draw. I don't have a drawful mind. I have a musical.
Okay.
And everybody has a particular talent. And some people have more than one talent.
Okay.
And so if I see that a student has a natural talent, I encourage that student to listen, to study, because you learn the theory of music, the building blocks from study. You learn the technique, or you develop the technique, the dexterity, from practice. Nature. Study and practice.
Wow. Nature, study, and practice. Now, tell me this. Okay, you compose a lot of works. In fact, as I think I gave in your bio, you composed some music for some of the great names. How do you move from learning, self-teaching yourself to play an instrument to composing? How did that happen?
Well, as I said, I studied theory and composition in college. My first composition class was at Bishop College in the early 1960s, but I wrote my first song, rhythm and blues type song, when I was still in high school. I was 16.
Okay.
And I was playing in a band led by Shorty Clemens, who was a barber and tenor saxophone player down on Bass Street.
All right.
And I wanted to write arrangements for that band. And so I just tried. And the trumpet player in the band said, well, you got the right notes, but the rhythm is wrong.
Okay.
You need to do that. So I realized I need to go to college and study theory. And so I did that. And by the time I got to Bishop College, I already had 4 years behind me in school. It took me 6.5 years to get my college degree.
Okay.
Because I went to 6 different colleges. I went to different schools to try to get what I felt like I needed from that particular school. I never followed the degree plan in music, so I ended up with a degree in English. because it was just easy to get a degree in English. Because what they wanted to teach me as a music major was stuff that was really redundant for me. They wanted to teach me beginning piano, and I had already taught myself to play.
Right.
It was a requirement.
Right.
So I just changed my major.
Okay.
I kept taking music classes as I saw fit. But not following the catalog. But I did follow the catalog in English. So I ended up with, I think, 2 or 3 hours of credit more in English than I had in music.
Wow.
So basically I had a double major.
Now I need to, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And so I learned to write in college, really. I developed my orchestration skills. You know, I had one major composition performed by the Dallas Symphony Orchestra. I had another composition performed by the Dallas Wind Symphony.
Oh.
Myers. And
so at the Meyerson, the Dallas Symphony, and then the other one was
the Dallas Symphony was at the Majestic Theater.
Okay.
The Dallas Wind Symphony piece was performed at the Meyerson.
Okay. How did that feel? I mean, you sitting there and you know these people are performing your work. How did that feel?
Well, you know, I felt good about it. I just knew that it was something that probably no other black musician had done.
Not probably. No other
local.
Right. Absolutely right. Did the audience appreciate that? Did the audience appreciate?
What I wrote for the Dallas Wind Symphony was a fanfare. I called it Freedman's Town Flourish. Meyerson is located in Freedman's Town.
Wow.
It was the first black settlement for free slaves in Dallas.
So
I dedicated it to that neighborhood, which is where I was born and which is where the Meyerson is.
Look at our history. Okay, we're going to get into how you used your degree in English and what it has led to currently. But before we do that, I want to ask you about Bishop College. We know that was one of the historic colleges in Dallas. It started in Waco?
It started in Marshall.
Marshall. Started in Marshall, ended up here, I think, in the early 60s. Did you ever believe that institution that was founded like in the 1880s would close? What were your thoughts as Bishop College was going through its troubles and all kind of people were trying to save it? Where were you on that scale, and what were your thoughts and what were your emotions?
Well, I was very disappointed because I felt like, maybe like a Palestinian.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like a man without a country. I was a person without an alma mater. The school didn't exist anymore. But I was given the advice, once it became Paul Quinn, the registrar, Mr. Hurd, who had been the registrar at Bishop College, still had an office there. And I was told, you better go back there and get a bunch of transcripts from Bishop, which I did.
Mm-hmm.
I got a half a dozen transcripts, and then eventually it shut down that office. But I was very disappointed that such a school closed because of something that happened internally. I don't know if I could call it theft. You can't steal from yourself. You know, I think mismanagement ultimately closed it.
I think the terms that were used were like embezzlement and fraud and mismanagement. Those were like the popular terms. And like you say, it came from within.
You can't lie to yourself and you can't steal from yourself.
Right.
And when that happened and it closed, you know, I really felt bad for all of the students who had gone there and had degrees from there.
Yeah.
And we no longer had an alma mater. We no longer had a school. Our school was gone.
We know that the Bishop Five ministers, Freddie Haynes and several of those, Carrie Wesley and several of those ministers, about five of them or so, came out of Bishop, and they became very prominent ministers. And like you said, they were they no longer had an alma mater. So it was a very sad time. Okay, let me kind of remind people again, you are watching the Blog Talk Show. I was just thinking, I am Norma Adams Wade. Our guest today is Roger Boykin, one of Dallas's historical African-American jazz musician who has excelled in all genres. of Music, and he was just telling us about some of the very outstanding performances and places, the Meyerson and Majestic Theater and all of those places where he has played with very high-profile names. But guess what, everybody? Roger Boykins also, he told you that he has a degree in English, but he also writes books, not music books. He writes music books, but in addition to music books, he is very much involved these days in writing books. Now, your first book, I understand, was called A Day at the Opera. Tell us when you did that. How did you get into that? How did you pick that subject? What's it about?
Well, it's a date.
A date at the opera.
It was actually written in 2015. It's a novelette, and it's based in Dallas. It's a Dallas story, and I had always wanted to write a novel. In fact, when I was at Bishop, I attempted to write a couple of novels. I wrote a few pages and just never got back to it. But when I discovered, once I got a Mac computer, they had a program there called iBooks Author.
Okay.
And they have templates. You can follow the template. It's pretty easy to write a book using that.
Okay.
And then, of course, it's published by Apple. And so I did that book and published it through Apple. And then in 2020, the pandemic hit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was basically, you know, self-quarantining. I was at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the idea to write a memoir or an autobiography, which I called Decades.
Okay.
I went back to my birth, and each 10-year period in my life was a decade.
Ah.
And so I went 10 years, right on up to 2020. And so a lot of pictures in there, pictures of my family, you know, my ex-wife, one of my Army buddies, just a lot of some of my music friends here in Dallas, one of the great Dallas musicians. A lot of photographs in there, and it's the story of my life, and a long section in there about my time in the Army.
Tell me, how did you begin your autobiography? Did you begin with step one, being born, or was there a pivotal point in your life, or how did you sit down and start this?
Well, I decided, of course, it would be in chronological order. So
okay.
I started by, you know, saying who my parents were, the year that I was born, where I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I was born at home because black doctors couldn't practice at the hospital.
So I didn't realize you were born at home. You were born at home.
In a house, 2812 Thomas Avenue.
Okay, you came into the world at 2812 Avenue. Huh?
I think it's on the corner of Thomas and Allen.
Okay, which is another well-known street. Yeah.
All right. And then, I talked about my lineage, you know, my parents, so where they were from and so forth. And my earliest recollection was at age 3.
Okay.
I sang happy birthday to myself at age 3.
Wow.
Happy birthday to me. I remember that, and so I basically started 3, and I talked about the first 10 years of my life, which took me through elementary school almost,
mm-hmm.
so about the 7th grade,
mm-hmm.
and then the next decade I was in school and started in college, and just 10 years at a time, on like that. And of course, I mentioned that the 2 years I was in the Army, kept a diary.
I'm sorry, say that again. The 2 years in the Army?
I kept a diary.
Do you still have it? You still have it?
Yeah, I do. And that made up a big part of the book, Decades.
Okay.
I just went on from there and talked about my career and just brought it right on up to 2020.
Okay, okay. Now, I have to ask you, when you were going through these decades, was there a period of time that you feel stands out more than the others? Would it be that period in the Army, or which of those decades do you think kind of stick out?
Probably the 80s. I would say the 80s.
What happened? What happened?
Well, it was in the 80s that I wrote the piece that the Symphony Orchestra played.
Okay.
I wrote most of the music for a show that the Dallas Black Dance Theater did called Deep Ellum Blues.
Okay, okay.
And I performed at the Majestic Theater with Brooke Benton. I played guitar with him.
Get out.
During the 80s. And I did a lot of things career-wise.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 80s. And so that was pretty important.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And of course, I grew quite a bit as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that was an outstanding year. I released my second album called Savoir Flair in 1983, which was a rhythm and blues record.
Mm.
And you know, I'm still it's become a collector's item.
Let me ask you this, I'm springing this on you, and I should have asked you this before you came on. Is it possible that either you could play some of your music that's recorded, or grab an instrument and play a tune for us? I didn't give you any warning about that, but is that at all possible for you to do for us today?
Well, let's see. Maybe I can play something from a recording, if
okay.
I can find it on YouTube.
Okay, okay, okay.
I think I can.
Okay.
Let's see. And this is, I have a lot of stuff on YouTube from some live performances and things that some other people have uploaded. I'll just do one of my compositions.
Okay.
And this is let me see. This is from an album that I did with Brenda Dallas Hunter.
Okay.
And she's she was living in Boston at the time, but when she lived in Dallas, she worked for the Dallas Police Department, and I met her, and she started singing with my trio.
Okay, and I wanted to ask you about the trio, but let's hear that, and then we'll come back to the trio.
Okay. Can you hear that?
Yes. I can hear it. Uh-oh, it stopped.
No. Can you hear that?
Keep going. Okay, that's it. That's it.
Can't deny it.
Okay, that's wonderful. You know what? That almost reminds me of like the Wiz, the movie The Wiz with Diana Ross. That kind of almost put me in that. There is a place that you can go to. It kind of has that mood to it.
Well, that whole album that we did together is inspirational. It's there's not a song on there that you know, children could would not be able to listen to.
Right.
That piece could be done at church.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
All the songs on that album have good messages.
Yeah.
Songs from the Soul, Brenda.
Songs from the Soul. And you said it's available on YouTube.
It's available on Spotify. I mean, if you want to buy the album, Spotify, and, you know, most of those platforms.
Okay.
I know you can get it on Spotify and probably, you know, iTunes, a lot of those places.
Let me just go back quickly, and we're going to hear a little bit, and I don't want to tire you out, but we're going to hear about the rest of your books. But I wanted to go back to a date at the opera, your first novelette. What was the date? What is the opera connection in that?
These two people meet. They go to the Winspear down in the Arts District to see a play, to see the opera Porgy and Bess.
Okay.
They meet by chance because his date stands him up and her date stands her up. So they meet and develop a relationship and, you know, just the things that they encounter along the way, the relationship develops and you know, just goes through probably a year, their relationship, and I don't want to give away this.
Okay, no, don't give it away.
It's a love story, and then there's a story within the story.
Okay, a story within the story. Okay, you got me curious.
There's another story in there too. I kind of got that idea from my study of Shakespeare.
Okay, all right.
So it's actually two stories, but the main story is this love story between these two people who meet by chance. And when they went to see Porgy and Bess, and both of them got stood up. So
I love it.
It goes from there.
Okay, now let me see how we're doing here on time, because I don't want to tire you. I don't want to tire you out. We've got a little bit of time left, but there are two other novels. Well, I say novels, but two other things that you have written. And with audience, we're talking to Roger Boykins, one of the standout jazz and blues and a musician, composer of all genre here in Dallas. And he's just telling us about his life from beginning to now and how he came, born in Dallas, born in Freedmantown, and became a musician with very well-known musical entertainers and performed in just some really outstanding places. And he's written for the Dallas Black Dance Theater and the Dallas Symphony Orchestra and performed at the Majestic Theater, just a lot outstanding life. Okay, now then you wrote poetry.
My third book, which has not been published yet, is a book of poetry.
Okay.
And song lyrics. And I haven't decided how I want to publish that. I might just give it away. But
when did you do that one?
That was done during the pandemic too.
Okay.
So three books within the past year.
You did three books in the past year.
3 months. And the most recent book, which I started about 4 months ago, it's I don't know what understand. It's not a novel. It doesn't have chapters. It's just a kind of a continuous fictitious story.
Okay, now that which one is that?
That's called Telltale.
Oh, okay. Now let me kind of warn. Let me kind of warn the audience about that. I did look into that one. Now that really is an adult book. It is for adults. And so since our audience is general, we'll just kind of say that it's the exploits of a senior male who is remembering some of his relationships, male-female relationships, romantic relationships, early in his life with different females, different individuals. And you take those stories and you made a book of it. So tell us about it. For our general audience, tell us about it.
Well, you know, first of all, let me say that all of my books have political messages, and I speak about civil rights. This book, even though it purports to be just about some sexual exploits, there are a lot of things in there that speak about you know, being a black person in America and some of the things that were happening during the time when he was doing these things that he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I allude to, you know, the civil rights movement. It's very much a Dallas book, although it takes place in three different states.
Okay.
Texas, Arkansas, and California.
Okay.
And along the way, you know, some interesting people, you know, walk through the book, and then it's about a life on a black college campus as well.
Okay.
It addresses a lot of subjects, including alcoholism.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
I got the idea to write this book from news stories that I'd seen about Governor Andrew Cuomo in New York and the trouble he was in because he had approached some women and they felt like, you know, he was aggressive or whatever.
Right. That's a very current setting, very current event. Mm-hmm.
But I started thinking, well, you know, women can be aggressive too.
Okay. Okay.
And I just felt like Governor Cuomo got in trouble because he didn't have a good rap. He didn't know how to talk to women.
Okay.
And so he took advantage of his position as governor, and he just didn't know how to hit on women.
Uh-huh, okay. I hear you.
His biggest problem, he was just swag.
I hear
and
you.
He put it that way. And so it got him in trouble because he used the wrong foot. And then I started thinking, well, you know, a lot of women who are aggressive too, and I wanted some parts of this book to talk about aggressive women.
Okay, okay, okay.
And how they, you know, should. If a woman likes a man, what's wrong with her? Let them know. You know, and so why is it the man who always has to make the first move? And
okay,
so
okay.
Some of the female characters in this book make the first move.
Okay, so, okay, okay.
Because my hero is a football player. You know, he's a young handsome quarterback on his college football team, and you know he pretty much has a lot of women who like him, and some of them, you know, let him know, even after his college career. So it's really a Dallas story. I talk about the Aranda's Club, and you know, it's a Dallas book. But part of it takes place in Little Rock, Arkansas. Part of it takes place in Los Angeles, and so that's what it's about. And yes, it's probably an adult book.
Well, no, I believe it would clearly be labeled an adult book with sexual relations between, you know, adults. I don't think it would be you think it would be in a high school library? I don't know.
Well, consenting adults.
Okay, Okay.
Consenting.
Right. Right. But I would clearly label it under the market of adult books, sort of like what's that? Shades of Gray. That very.
We don't go that far.
Yeah, okay. not that
know.
Far. Okay. Yeah. But for adults, for consenting adults.
Yeah. It's kind of light in comparison. It's
now, do
light.
You? I can envision you were talking about the politics of. Political opinions or societal viewpoints that you express in the book. And I can very, very clearly see it being the subject of a book club discussion about adult relationships. And I have heard, you know, the women's movement has really moved us from point A to point F, E, F, G or whatever. And a number of women have discussed no longer being held back to have to wait for the male to make the first move. So I
right.
clearly can see your book, Tale Tales, being the subject of book club discussions in the modern setting, the modern relation, male-female relationship. Agree or disagree?
I agree. And I might mention that it will soon be available from Amazon.
And I do want to, because in our winding down time, I do want you to share with the audience how they can get your book. Now, I think we have your website. I don't know if it's on the screen or not, but I'm going to say your website, RogerBoykinMusic.com. Correct,
right.
And that's Roger, yeah. RogerBoykin, no S, and then music, music.com. That's your website, and then your
right.
Go ahead, and then
okay.
your email, soul text. That's SOULTEX at iCloud. .com. Again, that email, soultext, SOULTEX, at iCloud.com. Correct?
Right.
And so they can learn more about, about your life, about your music, about your compositions and your productions and what you do. I think you mentioned on your website that you do help other musicians who need some direction. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure.
What all is on your website?
Well, I list, I show pictures of my various music method books.
Okay.
And they can order that through, my email address. And I just sell those digitally. Those are just copies. And they're bound like this.
Okay, very good.
So that musicians can open them and the pages will stay open.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And there's several of those, and then my CDs are mentioned there, and then the two literary works that were available at that time,
mm-hmm.
which have to be purchased through Apple.
Okay.
One is called The Day at the Opera and one is called Decades. My
okay,
latest
so those
book,
two, go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Tale Tales will be available in a couple of weeks from Amazon. Now that's going to be a paperback.
Oh, okay. So now that's the first paperback you've done, is that correct?
Right.
Okay. All right, so two are available at Apple. But order them through there. Then the current one will be available through Amazon. Okay.
Right.
And then your poetry and what else was that? Poetry and?
Yeah, this is a book of poetry called Out of My Head.
Okay. And you said you're thinking. Go ahead.
I haven't decided how I'm going to publish that yet. I might just give it away if you you know, purchase one of my other books. I'm not really sure. I might, I don't know exactly how I'm going to do it.
Right, right.
It would be available only as an e-book digitally, you know.
Now, so, on your website, your phone number, your contact number on your website is 972-298-6716. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, that is correct. Your contact number on your website, 972-298-6716. Now, before we wrap up, I did want to ask you, were there any points that you really wanted to tell us about that we did not talk about? And one of the things before you go, you do pay a lot of attention to political issues of the time. And I'm just wondering, do you have any just burning opinions about all that's been going on over the last year, the insurrection, the election of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and all of the infighting between the two-party system? I'm just wondering, as you were isolated at home during the pandemic and doing all of this writing of your books, and what did you make of where we are politically in society today?
Well, I think America made a big mistake to elect Donald Trump as president, because his presidency took us back 50 years. All the work that Martin Luther King and John Lewis and those people did have pretty much been nullified by this very selfish, egomaniacal person who has emboldened these fringe groups and divided our country. And a nation divided against itself cannot defeat an external enemy.
Say that again. A nation divided
against itself.
Uh-huh.
Cannot defeat an external enemy.
Oh my gosh, that's pretty clear.
And we are perhaps on the verge of a second civil war, which I call an uncivil war. And I heard somebody say the other day, this was a black journalist on one of the talk shows. She said that the Republican Party is becoming the party for white people, and the Democratic Party is the party for everybody else.
Wow.
All the other racial groups.
That's disappointing. That's disappointing. It's not supposed to be that way, is it?
No. And Texas, Georgia, and Florida, I mean, we have some of the most Baptist leaders in as far as governors. I don't understand how, I'll put it this way. The only thing that's going to save us as a country, the good people are going to have to rise up and stop being wimps and stop being bullied by the bad people. Throughout American history, the South bullied the North. Read history from the black perspective, or just read it accurately. This so-called critical race theory, 1619 Project, a lot of these good books about it, you'll see where the South, having the cotton and the slaves, bullied the North because they had the money. The capital, Washington, D.C., is in the South. Our first president, George Washington, was a Southerner. Thomas Jefferson was a Southerner. And so the South is pretty much trying to bully the North right now.
Wow.
That's happening again.
Wow. Wow.
And we can't let it happen. In other words, and this may sound racial, but this is the way I feel. The good white people are going to have to rise up and defeat the bad white people. I have some strong opinions about that, you know? And I think Joe Biden is one of the good guys.
Okay. You raised my curiosity about the methodology of accomplishing what you say. Now, we know, and Stacey Abrams in Atlanta is one example, did a yeoman's job of organizing voters, but how do we do that? How do we make these changes and get individuals to use the ballot? Or is that the method?
Well, you know, you have to mention Latosha Brown, too,
mm.
and her co-founder of Black Voters Matter. Those black women
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
changed,
mm.
contributed largely to changes in this country.
Okay.
I don't know of any group of people who can outwork black women.
I won't argue with you. I won't argue with you.
And, you know, everybody talks about Stacey Abrams, but let's not forget Latosha Brown.
Okay.
This woman got bussed and rode all through Georgia. And,
mm.
and I mean, she was on the ground.
Mm.
And she can sing, too. That woman can sing.
I haven't heard her sing.
Latosha Brown could tell the church.
Oh, my goodness. I'll have to go hear her.
Latosha Brown's the thing. And so we're going to have to win that battle. And I think black people will do it. And we need to come together with Asians and Latinos and Native Americans. And, you know, because the minorities are going to be the majority in a few years.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
We can get around to see it. But I think that's going to happen. And Donald Trump cleverly exploited cleavage that has always existed between white people and black people in this country.
Mm. Do you think he has a chance to return in 2024, I think?
No, I don't think he's going to be a viable candidate because he's in too much trouble.
Okay. Do you think he will be prosecuted in New York?
At least civilly, maybe not criminally, but, you know, I think he's done some things that a black person couldn't have gotten away with any of it. And I think he's done all that he's done to try to stay out of jail.
Mm. Mm.
January 6th, for an example,
mm-hmm.
and all the things that he stirred up, the man's just trying to stay out of jail. But if anybody in the history of the world needs to go to jail, it's Donald J. Trump.
Wow. You mentioned the critical race theory and the 1619 project. Do you feel that conservatives will have any success in changing the narrative of the insurrection of January 6th? Of course, the effort now is to paint it as just enthusiastic tourists who went to the White House and tore up things. Do you think they'll have any success in getting that put into history books?
The truth will eventually come out. Look at what's happening right now to Black Wall Street. It took 100 years.
Yeah.
But on every television channel now,
there's a
story of Black Wall Street.
Mm.
The truth is coming the light.
Mm, mm,
and what really happened on the 6th of January will eventually come to light.
Mm.
The truth will come out, and once it does come out, I think the masses of people will rise up and do something meaningful about it and get the scalawags out.
I love it.
Always happens. Look at the French Revolution.
Okay.
It takes so much.
Mm.
Every civilization in history, many of the great civilizations fell. Look what happened to Julius Caesar.
Mm.
I mean,
mm.
I'm telling you, I think good will win out over bad, and the truth will come to light eventually.
What is that saying? From your lips to God's ears. So we will hope for to see that come to fruition. Roger Boykin, it has been such a delight to talk with you during this time. If we have missed any points that you wanted to mention, please mention those. If we've missed anything, did we miss anything?
Well, let me just tell you this, Norma.
Okay.
You know, I've read your writings for years. And, you know, I've worked in journalism. In fact, when I was a columnist at the Dallas Express, my boss was Julia Scott Reed.
I did not know that. My mentor.
He was like a mentor for me too.
Oh wow.
And so, you know, I've written for several of the Black weekly newspapers, primarily music related.
Yeah, yeah.
I wrote for the first paper that Bill Blair put out.
Okay, okay.
It was in 1964.
Mm.
And Jack Palms, different papers, and I mentioned the Dallas Express. I had an article in the Oak Cliff Tribune. And so, you know, I've been writing a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Primarily about music.
Right, right. Oh, that's so exciting. And you just mentioned the name Jack Palms. I had forgotten about him. I appreciate you, as they say their names. I appreciate you doing that. And, of course, Julia Scott Reed.
And you carry on that tradition yourself. And I'm so happy that I've been able to be on your show. Thank you.
Well, I am honored. I am honored. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Go get you a glass of water.
Can I leave you with a Jack Palms quote?
Oh, please, please.
He said, this is what he told me many years ago. He said, only the people who are around to attend my funeral will know whether my life ended in success or failure.
Wow. That's heavy duty. Say it again.
Only the people who are around to attend my funeral will know for sure whether my life ended in success or failure.
Oh, wow.
That's from Jack Palm.
Okay. Thank you. Go get a glass of water and continue your success. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Take care.
All right, everybody. I guess we're going to move on. And let's see. Wow. That was just, let's see now. I don't know how to, there we go. There we go. All righty. Well, let me kind of just remind you of a thing. Now, this Saturday, June 5, is the runoff election day. And here in Dallas, now we just completed early voting. So here in Dallas, we will, Saturdays will be from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And we will have runoffs in various districts. And in Fort Worth, one of the high profile elections is for mayor, for Fort Worth mayor. And we have two women who are vying to replace Mayor Betsy Price. And the two women are Maddie Parker and Deborah Peoples. Now, if Deborah Peoples wins, she would be the first African American, she would be the first African American mayor of Fort Worth. Now, Dallas, we've been there, done that already. But Deborah Peoples would be the first African-American mayor in Fort Worth should she win the vote this Saturday, June 5. So we're really going to, and she's, of course, her contender is Maddie Parker, and Maddie Parker was the chief of staff for former Mayor Betsy Price. We're going to pay attention. We're going to pay attention to that. And, of course, the campaign has been vigorous, been very, and several of the campaigns for these runoff elections have been vigorous campaigns. Of course, the candidates in Fort Worth, here's some of their endorsements. Deborah Peoples has been endorsed by former U.S. Representative Beto O'Rourke of El Paso, Democrat of El Paso. She has been endorsed by U.S. Congresswoman Eddie Bernice Johnson of Dallas. She has been endorsed by State Senator Royce West. She has been endorsed by U.S. Representative Mark Vesey of Fort Worth. Also, a political action committee called Emily's List that helps elect female Democratic candidates have endorsed her. Now, Peoples is the chairwoman of the Tarrant County Democratic Party, and so she knows what she's talking about. She knows what she's talking about, and of course, Fort Worth has newly gained status as the 12th largest city in the nation, and so the issues that we know that our society is dealing with, racial fallout from the George Floyd murder back in on Memorial Day last year, 2020, and we know that that murder by a white police officer, Derek Chauvin, was heard around the world. The implications were global, and the reactions were quick and loud and very effective. Very diverse people, not just African Americans, but diverse reactions around the globe. We know that George Floyd's daughter, little Gigi, said, "Daddy changed the world," and she did not lie. He did. And so some of the issues that they're dealing with in Fort Worth also involve whether or not to use the strategy of what's called defunding the police. I'm not that fond of that term, but what it actually means is using funds that go to police actions and using those funds to redirect them into community services that would change how communities would change the success of particularly underserved communities where a lot of the crime happens. And the theory is that you take some of this money from police, who in many cases are using a deadly force and intimidation and police brutality and all of that. Not all police, but certainly an unfounded number of them are. So take that money and put it into underserved communities so that the communities can better themselves economically, socially, families can be in a better position. And so that's one of the issues that the candidates have talked about. They talked about infrastructure changes in the Fort Worth area and how to improve the light rail system. And again, that whole racial equity problem is such a big issue nationally in all of the districts and the campaigns. And so we'll just see. We'll see how that
how that turns out. Now, some events that are going on right now. And let me tell you about the parks. A lot of the swimming pools are opening back up right now. And the X-Line Park has been building an aquatic center for some time. And so tomorrow, June 3rd, this aquatic center, there will be a ribbon cutting for it. And it is, the address is 2430 Eugene Street. And it's right off of Pine Street in South Dallas, in that area. And there will be a bathhouse. It will have a children's pool. It will have umbrella tables and a water slide, a climbing wall. And I'm encouraging you to go. It's going to begin. It's gonna open at 10:30, and then the ribbon cutting will be at 5. So go and see that new facility. And another thing that's going on tomorrow is a cross-cultural conversation about diversity. There have been some previous conversations, but this one will be a continuation. It will be tomorrow, and it will also be June 10th from noon to 2 p.m. It's free, and it's at the University of North Texas at Dallas, Inserts Institute, and Dallas College co-sponsors it. It's a virtual series about diversity, equity, and inclusion. Now, business and community leaders will provide data, reports, and personal accounts. And this particular session is titled "The Current State of Inclusion in Dallas." The Current State of Inclusion in Dallas. Now, if you want to register, go to Eventbrite, and you can look that up and register for that at Eventbrite. And again, it's called "The Current State of Inclusion in Dallas," and it's called also "A Candid Cross-Cultural Conversation About Diversity." Now, one other thing is that we know that Father's Day is coming up soon, and this event is called the Ultimate Dad's Giveaway for Father's Day, and it's you can sign up for it, and the deadline to sign up for it is June 17th, and it's being sponsored by the Martin Luther King Junior Center on Martin Luther King Junior Boulevard, and they want dads age 16 on up to sign up for free prizes that will include, you can get some tools. You know, you need to repair things around the house. You can get electronics and appliances in honor of Father's Day. And so the sponsors of this, they want you to come out, dads, because they say, you know, a lot of times dads get overlooked. Moms get a lot of attention, but dads get, a lot of times don't get equal recognition. But they want to honor you, dads, from age 16 on up. So go on for that. And the drawing, there will be a drawing, and it will be Wednesday, June 18 at noon. And then winners will pick up their prizes at the Juneteenth Festival. And again, you can register on Eventbrite, and it's called Ultimate Dad's
Eventbrite.com, Ultimate Dads, Eventbrite.com. So those are some of the things. Now, I'm reminding everybody, too, you know, youngsters now from age 12 on up are eligible for the coronavirus vaccine. And you can get it pretty much most places now that the adults were getting it, at pharmacies, at various central sites, Parkland Memorial Hospital and Ellis Davis Fieldhouse. I think they're still doing it at Eastfield College in Mesquite, I believe. But I know that they pretty much opened up the vaccines for youngsters and adults at most of the pharmacies. And you can go online and you can go to the Dallas County site to find out various places where you can get the COVID vaccine. It's kind of tapered off. They are closing. So Potter's House, they've closed that one. And I understand they're going to close down the one at Fair Park because the turnout has kind of waned. So they're really trying to get people to come out. I read also that there are some cities. I'm trying to remember which one, but there are some cities that are doing a lottery. You can win. You can win, like $1,000 or something. I'm trying to find where I saw that by signing up to get the COVID vaccine. Here we go. It's in Denver, Colorado. You get a shot, and you also to win like $1,000, but the whole budget for it, they've set aside $1 million. The governor has set aside $1 million, and there will be, okay, five people can win it. So they set aside $1 million, so five people can win. Now, the money came from the federal relief fund. So that's, to me, that was pretty interesting. So somebody came up with that idea. I know what, we'll get people to come out and get the vaccine. And if you get a shot, you get a chance to win a hefty prize in the Denver lottery. So that's pretty interesting. Of course, we know that this whole, well, two things. This past weekend, of course, was Memorial Day, and there were a lot of somber events around Memorial Day. And, of course, we celebrate Memorial Day to pay tribute to brave soldiers who defend our country and lost their lives in defending our country. And then, of course, This past week and weekend leading up to the date, we paid tribute to the many African Americans in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who lost their lives during the raid on what was known as Black Wall Street, and it was in the Greenwood community of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and this was the 100th anniversary of that, and it was observed the same weekend as Memorial Day. It got a lot of media attention. Even President Joe Biden went to Tulsa and made remarks and encouraging remarks and saying that we will not forget. That whole episode had been forgotten for way too many decades, way, way, way too many decades. It happened in the 20s, It happened in the 1920s, and this was the 100th anniversary. And the stats that we've been told were that 300 very, what should I say, well-off or well-to-do or respected. I think more respected would be a better description. African-Americans in this thriving community. And it was called Black Wall Street because the people who had businesses and homes there had worked hard and achieved much. And because some whites were told that some a white woman had been sexually assaulted, they went to find an African-American man, and then African-Americans came out to try to defend him from being taken from confinement and being lynched, and it set off a race war. And ultimately, they dropped bombs on the area and burned down the whole community, achieved community, businesses and historic churches and prominent homes and schools, all gone, burned to the ground. And there are a few survivors still, some who went to Washington and made comments before the elected officials there in Washington. And now, after 100 years, after a century, this sad episode is finally getting attention. So those were two things. High school graduations. Have y'all noticed this kind of an upbeat attitude now in with the graduates of 2021? It's an upbeat day. The ceremonies are being held and family gatherings are being held, and you see signs all in the yards congratulating current graduates. And so things are turning around and looking up, and we could not be more happy that that's happening. We want to keep attention on the old, what was known as Shingles Mountain in the southeast area of Dallas. The residents there and social leaders, community leaders worked real, real hard to dismantle an environmentally dangerous mountain of rubbish in that area. And now here they are having to almost fight again because some industrial businesses are trying to park, making it into a parking lot now for big diesel trucks and what have you that are giving off all kind of environmentally not safe fuel. And so the neighbors are having to fight again, and some leaders from Paul Quinn College and some of the major churches, particularly Friendship West and its dynamic senior pastor, Dr. Frederick Haynes, went and spoke at a recent community meeting, and the area is called Floral Farms in Southeast Dallas. And so it's a zoning issue. Now, former Dallas City Councilwoman Diane Ragsdale was one of the foremost leaders back in the 80s or so to draw attention to how zoning issues affect our communities, underserved communities. And so here we are again. This is a zoning issue. And unfortunately, we're not hearing from city leaders what we want to hear, that they're going to fight for this community and correct the zoning issue that is allowing these environmentally unsafe businesses to use that area for their industrial practices that are not safe for the environment. Now, people, our people, descendants of Africa, live in this community and view it as home, have been there a long, 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 long time and have fought against these things. But it's almost like, well, we don't care about the residents. It's like we don't care about the residents as long as the businesses who bring in this money can go there under current zoning laws and do unsafe business for the environment. It's almost like, I mean, it's like the city is looking the other way. You know, you just have to go by what you see, and what you see is that you see the city apparently looking the other way. Now, we're going to believe that somebody's going to come forward, like Michael Sorrell, Dr. Michael Sorrell at Paul Quinn and Reverend Dr. Frederick Haynes of Friendship West, and lead other leaders. There are many other community leaders and nonprofit group leaders who are helping residents in that area, but we certainly hope that they don't have to go through what they went through with Shingles Mountain. We learned that the young man named Dylan Roof, who killed the 9 members of a South Carolina church, that his attorney is arguing, has argued before a 3-judge panel mm-hmm. in Columbia, South Carolina, that that Dylan Roof was not competent to represent himself. He represented himself during when that case went to court. After he went to this church service and sat through the service and the members welcomed him, and he ended up killing 9 of those members, including the pastor. But now his attorney has gone before this 3-judge panel to say that he was not competent. So to get him off that way, we'll just try to see how that comes out. What do you think about this this convention that was just held on May 28th here in Dallas? It was called For God and Country, For God and Country Political Convention, and it was at the downtown Omni. And these were many of the people who support former President Donald Trump's argument that the election was stolen from him. And people who see life better call that the big lie. But most of the folk who were at this convention that was held on Friday down at the downtown Omni, they are still pushing that narrative, and still it's obvious that they're still trying to say that Donald Trump might get reelected again to president. Now, the arrows are pointing to some sort of conviction for him for various charges of fraud and mismanagement of various businesses. So we'll have to stay tuned to that. But a convention here in Dallas called For God and Country Political Convention, and their former cabinet people were there, Trump cabinet people were there, and what have you. So very interesting. Now, I want everybody to stay safe during the rainy season. Now, the weather reporters are saying that we're in for rain, a steady stream of rain in coming days, and that we're seeing the news reports flooding, just a lot of flooding in places that where this has not happened before, or just has been happening in recent years. So the warnings are turn around, don't drown. If you see standing water when you're driving, don't drive through it. And they have the amount of water that can lift your car up and make it float away when you think you can drive through it. So the saying is, turn around, don't drive, because we're in for a lot of rain, and we want you to stay safe. They're still trying to fight to get air conditioning put in state prison, and we're hoping that that can be a successful effort. It made it, the effort made it through the state house, but then it got stalled and is stalled in the state Senate, which is Republican led. Now we know it gets hot in Texas, and yes, prisoners are there supposedly for having broken the law, but they don't need to be suffering like that in prisons that lack air conditioning. So we want to stop that. We want to see that bill will make it through, and that the prisoners will be treated humanely. Let's hope that happens. Now you know that the shooting that was, well, I say shooting, but at North Park, what was that, yesterday at some point, there was a false alarm, and but it turned out to be a false alarm. A man who needed some mental help had a skateboard, and he was banging it on the floor in North Park. And so, but it turned out that it was not a shooter, and no one was hurt. So we're happy for that. So as we get ready to say goodbye, we want to remind you, I love the message in song. Now, we know that John Lennon was a famous musician, and he recorded a song called Imagine. So let's listen to the message in his song as we go off. Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us, only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there is no country. It isn't hard to do. Nothing to kill or to die for. No religion, too. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. No need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us and the world will live as one. Just imagine that. Try to paint that picture in your mind. Imagine. All righty, bye now.
Injured broadcast.
Mm-hmm.